That's Lee Morgan on trumpet opening up on the title track of his 1965 album, Cornbread. Jackie McLean on alto sax, Hank Mobley on tenor, Herbie Hancock on piano, and Larry Ridley on bass, and Bill Higgins on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. Well, it seems that it's a poll-driven presidential race, after all. Who's running? Who's waiting? Who's quitting? Who's leading? Who's lagging? Who doesn't even have a prayer? Well, it's all in the polls. Running the spectrum between unbiased, and there are very few in this category, and blatantly partisan, there are way too many in this category, the intent more and more is not merely to ascertain or reflect what people are thinking or doing politically, but in fact to sway and in some cases even to skew public opinion so as to influence political attitudes and choices. We've talked about this quite a bit on this program. So today we have yet another example of how important polls are to this whole process of so-called democracy, with the announcement by Joe Biden that he is not going to run. I don't know why it was one of those, it has become a very theatrical thing, too, this presidential race. We are supposed to be hanging on, you know, pins and needles with anticipation. Will he? Won't he? You know, the same thing with when Hillary Clinton was supposedly contemplating. Will she announce? Won't she announce? As if, you know, this is the stuff. That itself is the political issue. So Biden announces today that he does not intend to seek the presidential nomination, the Democratic presidential nomination, ending all these months of speculation as to what he's going to do. But why? Here's the Washington Post talking about polls. It said in a story filed today that the polls basically had played such a great part in Biden's decision. Well, not surprisingly. And this is what is going on. Lots and lots of polls. Polls are showing that Donald Trump is likely to be the GOP nominee after all. Polls are showing that Hillary Clinton is losing some ground to Bernie Sanders. Polls. But it's all about swaying your opinion about the race, about the people in the race, about the things that should concern you in this race. So, you know, we are not slaves to the status quo. We have our own independent way of thinking. So today, the task is to answer this question. What is shaping your political attitudes and choices at this moment in the presidential race? What is shaping it? Never mind the polls. We're interested in those things, those issues, those concerns that compel you to develop a particular attitude about this race, and in turn will shape what you are likely to do as a result of developing a particular attitude about the race. All right, so that's the question today. It's open-ended, and I'm hoping that we would really get some substantive discussion going here at 888-874-4888. We know what polls do, and we know that when we talk about elections, it's an industry. It is not really so much an exercise of democracy. Democracy has nothing to do with elections, really, except that it provides cosmetic cover for the argument, well, yes, the people have made their choices known. But we know that so much money is invested in shaping those choices, in even predicting those choices, in forcing you to make some choices through advertising, through targeted campaigns, lobbyists, and the whole industry is now functioning on the fulcrum of the huge sums of money that are being poured into this very business of shaping public opinion. And shaping it in a way that manipulates the way you think about things so that their issues become your issues. Their concerns become your concerns. Their view of the world is your view of the world. Their, quote, issues are your issues. I'm asking, apart from all of that, right now where things are in this race, it's early still, but we have enough indications as to where things are going. And these things being shaped by polls that are intended to shape your opinion and your action and your belief based on the success they have with the targeted campaigns that they're doing to achieve just that. What are you thinking? What is shaping your political view at this moment? 888-874-4888. Let's start in New York with Jay. Jay, you're on the air.
How are you, Eutrice? How are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Good to hear that. Good to hear that. You sound strong.
Thank you so much. Thank you. So what's shaping your opinion? What, at this point, what is shaping your political view, and what is that view?
The only thing that's really shaping my political view is looking for this country to move forward without the nut jobs, the nature of Trump and Carson and Cruz. Because I don't think that they have what it takes to move forward and serve the country in whatever direction it should go. I just think that they don't have what it takes to go on the world stage and to keep us out of endless wars and endless conflicts.
But if I could challenge you a little bit today to go beyond that, because you're telling me what is your view, but within the context of the larger argument, I'm asking, what is that view? Not what you don't like, but what is shaping your view now?
Oh, the thing that's shaping my view is basically that we don't go into wars and that people have the opportunity to continuously progress in this country in whatever fashion that may be. I would hate to see the decimation of Social Security and other programs that are helping the poor and the less fortunate in some kind of way. I think that the Republicans, if they get in office, will cause great harm to those things. Now, are the Democrats any better? On a certain level, yes. On other levels, maybe not. But, you know, I'm just concerned about everyday people. I think that we have more of a chance of people that are not as fortunate as the 1% and those that are a little bit below them to just be in a situation where they're able to survive in this country. And I don't think with Republicans in office that would happen. So I'm more concerned about social policy than I am about all of the other things. Because I also don't think that there's going to be an increase in jobs in the manner in which Trump and the rest of them speak about. I don't see it. I think that also the Democrats may...
But where would the answer come from to those issues that you have just raised? Where do you think the solutions are? Who is, in your view, who is addressing these issues to your satisfaction?
Oh, none of them are. But I think that the Democrats may have a little more openness as you have the push from outside individuals, from organizations, from people who are placed in situations now that they will have to start protesting and they will have to start making some sort of demand. I think, you know, let's say a Sanders would be more open to dealing with certain social inequalities than Hillary would. But I think that the Republicans would have no concern whatsoever in regard to those things. But I think it's going to be the people that will determine and dictate whoever becomes the president from the Democratic side on how they will move forward. I just don't see anybody on the Republican side holding firm to uplifting social justice and making lives of people better.
All right. Thank you so much for getting our program started today with your views. Thank you so much.
Have a good day.
Okay. Bye-bye. 888-874-4888. The task is, based on everything that is happening so far, and perhaps more importantly, despite what is happening so far in the so-called coverage that we're seeing, in the polls that we're hearing every single day, there are zillions of polls pointing us in this direction or that, people pulling and tugging at your mind or whatever is left of our minds in these stressful times. But what is shaping right at this moment in so far as this campaign has gotten started and is unfolding, what is shaping your view? What is important to keep sight of here? What is it that you think is going to guide both your political attitude and your political choice? Brooklyn, Jose, you're on the air.
Oh, wow. Hey, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Okay. Well, what you're asking is actually a number of questions that no one has had the time or the organization and the infrastructure to give clarity to. And as we look at history, it always becomes a question of organization. One of the things that in this period that we have to seek to understand is what is the thing that can move humanity forward? No one has asked or answered that question. And within this period, as we observe, we have not the extreme right or the extreme left, we have the extreme center that Obama represents.
I'm listening.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes my phone clicks off. And as we examine the question of the extreme center that Obama represents, it has left a vacuum of in the political culture of a basic clown show. Like, and these people are not the best of the best, but they're the most eccentric and the most inarticulate and the worst. We cannot say Hillary Clinton is the best of the, or even Bernie Sanders, who's always been a member of the right and the militarism, whereas as a liberal, you govern from the right, as we have in Canada. And those questions have to be thoroughly and systematically examined, and in this period, we don't have the historians to do that. I'm not going to name names, but they all just performance as leadership. And until those questions are asked and answered in a more systematic and an intellectually engaging way, because I find Americans the most anti-intellectual of industrialized societies, and that's how we always get punked by symbolism, colorful symbolism, and nothing deeper than that. So what...
Jose, are you there? Did we lose you? Jose? Oh. Well, he was right. His phone kind of cut him off, and he was on a great, great roll there. But I appreciate the points that you were able to make before we lost contact with you. Hopefully you can call back and finish up, because you were highlighting some things very, very important for consideration. We are still in New York with Ali. Hello, Ali. You're on the air.
Hi, Idris. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
And I'm saying, I just wanted to say hello to all the listeners. And I have a comment that I wanted to make, but I also wanted to talk to about Rise Up October before I finish. This is something that is going to be happening in New York for the next, from the 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. And I would like to make just, let the audience, especially the listener from New York City, what is going to happen for those 3 days in New York City. But my first things that I'm going to say to you is my comment is based on that interview that you put yesterday about from Tariq Ali.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about that it doesn't matter. And back then when he did that, that conference, I guess the interview, what happened in Greece with the Syriza party, he didn't even know that that will be happening, what happened with that party, and how supposedly the main person in that party supposedly was black male. And now what the European Union and the IMF and all these people together, what they were looking for, now it was implemented, is even worse than the beginning of when he won the first election. And I'm going back to what he was talking about. It doesn't matter who wins. And I just wanted to make a reference to the gentleman who called the first one. He was talking about that if it would be worse if a Republican win. The fact of the matter that, especially with Bill Clinton, who was supposed to be a progressive, I guess, liberal, whatever you want to call it, all these things that we're going through right now, but they were implemented by the so-called liberal. Look what's happening with Obama right now, and look what people of color we are going through. There is more people being deported from this country than ever before. There is more people in jail in this country than ever before. And then you go on and on. And this is the guy who ran on a platform of change. So is the gentleman in Canada who just won. He just won in a I was listening to his speech, and it's almost like fake. It's almost like a theater if you listen to all these politicians. It's almost like, yeah, they run because, like Tariq Ali said, he said when people go to vote, it's because they don't want to see the face that is there right at the moment. But it turned out that what has changed? Nothing changes. In Canada, he's still going to implement the same violation of people's rights. He's still approving the pipeline that is coming from Canada with that oil that is so, the Tarzan, who is so dirty, okay? So when you talk about what has changed from these people they're running, it doesn't matter what party gets there, it will be the same. The elimination of Social Security. Look what happened. When a Democrat gets there, at least when a Republican gets there on the same place as the Democrat, at least you get some people to fight the Republicans. But when a Democrat gets into power, what do the Democrats in the Senate, in the House of Representatives, they don't want to say, all of them, they stay hush, hush, very quiet. And the implementation of whatever the Republicans want is implemented or the Democrats. So this
I have to ask you. You delineated the issues as you see them that are shaping your political attitudes. Now, what does this do for your political choices? What would those choices be as things are right now?
Like Patricia always talks about, I'm not going to the booth. Who wants to go there? I mean, you listen to that interview from Tariq Ali, and who wants to go there just to change a face and then be slapped with these austerity measures that eventually they're going to come here and very, very strong because they have been implementing. They use all the country as a guinea pig, and they're coming here. Is that TPP that people are fighting here? PPP is coming. TPP is coming, and it will be here. I don't care that we go out and protest and do this. It will be implemented. It will be that contract or the TPP will come. They already use the Dominican Republic. They use some country in South America that they have been sued by corporation because they're not making their money that they were expected to make. And all those things is coming. TPP is coming. What is my political... I'm not going to, why do I even want to vote for Hillary? Why do I even want to vote for Bernie? I mean, if you hear Bernie's record about the Jewish issue, the militarization of this continent, on and on and on, why do I want it to go? It's the same thing. And then people say, well, you didn't vote, don't complain. No, but I pay taxes. And those taxes is why these people get paid for. I could always complain. And that's what I have been doing here. But I just want to, can I just say about the 22nd and the 23rd and the 24th? Rise Up October, Stop Police and Terror and Murder. It's a national march in New York City, Saturday, October 24th. We're gonna gather at Washington and at Washington Square Park at 11 o'clock to march to the Bryant Park. And tomorrow, some of the parents from around the country, they're going to gather at 42nd Street in Times Square at 10 o'clock to say their name. That will be tomorrow. And please go to Rise Up, hashtag Rise Up October, or stopmassincarceration.net to get all the information. Come on, people. Come and support us. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your call today. Wow, it's a very heavily New York day because... Here from Brooklyn is David.
Hello, Eutrice.
Hello.
As far as I'm concerned, the Republicans and Democrats are doing exactly what they are supposed to do. The fact is that the people that live in the country don't know how to play the game. They don't understand the game. Republicans and Democrats serve the same ruling class, capitalist, imperial interests. That's all. So we've got to get away from getting involved in their party. They don't serve the interests of the people. That's why in this country you have so many poor people and near poor people. There's still a poor and near poor people, and that's just the way they want it. Now, yesterday you had on Tariq Ali. He was wonderful. And I think people, if they listen, they would understand that the Republicans and Democrats and people that run those parties, the oligarchs that run the country and the parties, will give up just enough to keep down rebellion. So they're not going to give the proper social benefits or things that people need in terms of the quality of life for people in the country. And they have the luxury because of the demographics of the United States where you have all these different people where they can play people against each other. That's what's going on. And so they're very effective in terms of making profit. Capitalism is about making profit for its investors, period. Not social benefits, not creating jobs, and all the things they talk about, which is total nonsense. And it's not about democracy either. So the point is, people that live here don't understand the game, don't know how to play the game, because they shouldn't be voting at all for capitalist parties, Republicans and Democrats. There should be something new for people who really want to improve the quality of life economically and socially for people who live in the country.
So is this your version? Is this your explanation of what your political choices are shaped
well,
by?
Well, there's no choice for a Republican and Democrat, as far as I'm concerned, especially in a battleground, non-battleground state. The point is that people need to get and start forming their own parties.
So, for 2016, I'll ask you straight, what are you doing? What are you likely to do? Let's do it. Let's ask you the question in poll style. What are you likely to do?
For me, I'll probably go and vote, and I'll probably be voting for some third party candidate. I haven't decided.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. Thank you. From New Jersey, we have Pam. You're on the air. Pam, are you there? All right. Also from New Jersey, Michael, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice. It's Michael from New Jersey.
Yes.
And I want to greet the PRN audience as well.
Thank you so much.
Well, you know, I've been looking a little bit about on these, you know, election issues that are coming up. And, you know, I also listened to your program, the last one you had with Tariq Aziz, which was very interesting. It was a good listen. And as he stated, I think, you know, capitalism has seen its day and its destructiveness has kind of run its course. And so, you know, we do need an alternative now. But I don't think any of the candidates are really giving us a real alternative, although Bernie does make gestures and sounds as if, you know, something could possibly be done. And, of course, they're going to, you know, they're trying to marginalize whatever he says as being, you know, anti-American or, you know, he doesn't know. And, you know, I'm watching some of these debates a little bit. And, you know, what they're doing is they're invoking this term, the American people. I know what the American people want. But you don't know what the American people want. And what do the American people want? And who are the American people? They're fragmented into many, many different factions, ideologies, religious beliefs, socioeconomic status. You know, they're just fragmented in a million ways. But everybody, all the candidates seem to know the American people and what they want. And of course, they're going to provide it for them. So this is a problem. I mean, you know, when Hillary Clinton says, you know, turns over to Bernie Sanders, says, you don't know the American people. I know the American people. So what is she saying?
Well, she knows.
Like you're not our family, you know what I mean?
So with this, Michael, what is your political choice this year? What are you thinking that you are likely to do?
Well, you know, I have a fondness for Bernie because you know he seems to be, you know, his heart seems to be in the right place, but he's at the game too long and he's really a politician. And he's not in a position to do anything. You know, I saw last night, I saw a gentleman, Lawrence Lessig, who's also a Democratic candidate. Nobody knows of him, but he's a professor or something running for the presidency, and he's been not given a stage, but he He's on the internet. You can look him up. He was
a guest
candidate
on our program some time ago. Yes,
he's a one-issue candidate, and it has to do with one of my pet peeves, and that's getting money out of politics. And basically, he's running basically to have a constitutional convention with amendments to make voting a fair get people back voting, because he doesn't see anything happening even if Bernie gets into office. And what is he offering? Basically, I don't know.
He's offering to quit if he's elected. He says he'll quit.
Lawrence Lessig, yes. He's made that clear that he's in it for this one issue.
Yeah.
And he's not really interested in being president, but he's trying to find some way to, and it's really crucial because he's right. I listened to him a little bit. Even if Bernie gets in and he wants, free public education, and he wants to, make a green economy and polish up some of the hard edges of capitalism, etc. Even if he wants to do that, even if that's beneficial, it's not going to happen because, the Republicans really have, they've given up on the presidency. They have other strategies. I don't really believe they think that they could ever win the presidency again because of the Democrats, etc.
Do you believe, like David, therefore the choice might be third party? Vote for a third party?
For me, yes. I'm going to vote for third party this year, and I have to listen to the third party candidates. I'm not going to personally vote for anybody, any of the candidates, because Bernie's not going to get there because of the way things are. It's not going to happen. And he's going to turn out to be a supporter of Hillary, and maybe they'll put him on the ticket. Who knows? But he's not our solution either. I don't feel that Bernie's a solution. He's moving. I've said earlier, on another program, I thought we should have a welfare state at this point until things get straightened out, and we. There's some degree of order and a little bit of self-growth and understanding, and so he's in that moving in that direction with socialism, but the socialism he's not really so keen on that either.
He's been very careful now. He's been very careful not to just leave the word socialist by itself. He says
I'm
a democratic socialist, and he still
has
to explain what that is. So,
yes, and he says we have to educate everybody. Social Security is socialism and all this business. So
right now you're leaning toward a third party choice.
Yes.
And thanks a lot. I see where you're going. Thanks so much for that.
You're welcome.
We're staying in New Jersey with Pam, who is back. Hello, Pam.
Hi, hello, Eutrice. I'll be a very happy girl if I never hear the word Republican or Democrat again, because they're both for war and not helping the poor, letting people starve in America. And Jill Stein is running on the Green Party, and she's anti-war, don't spend so much money on military, anti-GMO. And you can go to her at Jill2016.com. She's running for president on the Green Party.
Yeah, but let's get more to what you're thinking. The task today is to give us an idea of what your political attitudes are at this point in the race and what your choices are likely to be.
Well, I'll definitely vote for Jill Stein because she's anti-war, anti-nuclear plan, and to quote her on her Jill2016.com, she says, "It is time to build a people's movement to end unemployment and poverty, avert climate catastrophe, build a sustainable, just economy, and recognize the dignity and human rights of every person. The power to create this new world is not in our hopes. It's not in our dreams. It's in our hands. And I don't know much about the polls, but I think she needs people to help her get the poll votes up so she can run for president. So I'm on the internet trying to find out how to help her get the polls up. Do you know anything about the polls and how the petitions are? And
No. That's not my area at all.
No.
But thanks for giving us an idea of where you are, where you're going with this. Thanks for contributing today. Let's go to Michigan. Leona, you're on the air.
Greetings, Utrice, and greetings to the PRN audience.
Thank you for that as well. Thank you.
This is my first time calling. I'm a little bit nervous, but I really like your show, and I make a point to listen to it every day.
Thank you so much.
PRN audience members are some of my favorites, like Miss Sarah down in Texas and stuff. In terms of your question for today, where am I politically? Is that my phrasing it right?
Yes. What are your political attitudes at this time with respect to this presidential race, and what are your political choices likely to be?
Okay. Well, in terms of the presidential race, I'm not impressed with anybody at this point, and I guess the presidency of Barack Obama kind of woke me up. I used to be a point person for this progressive Democrat operation here in Michigan. I've since departed from that. They're not progressive enough, and they don't give a hoot about eliminating the system of white supremacy and replacing it with a system of justice. That's where I'm at politically. I don't know. I think that that's one of the system of white supremacy, that the idea of mistreating people because of the color of their skin is in the bone marrow of this country from its inception. You know, the government structure is built on it. The people who run for these elected offices have to support it if they're going to advance. I think if I go to the polls at all, I'll try to vote on something on the local level and something that I've taken the time to get informed about before casting a vote. I used to be, I guess, somewhat political, like I said, pretty active in the Democratic Party, but I follow the work of Neely Fuller as well, and he says, back in 71, if you don't understand racism, white supremacy, what it is and how it works, everything else that you understand will only confuse you. And I'm finding that to be true. So that's all that I have right now, and I certainly appreciate you for doing this show, doing this work, and God bless you.
Thank you, but don't go so fast. Let's explore a couple of points that you made here. The Democratic Party as a party, first, what drew you to it, and now what repels you from it?
Well, what drew it to me was just family tradition. I didn't think about it; just fell right into it. My folks voted Democratic. They yelled against Republicans. I remember my uncles and the elders would say, "When Republicans get in office, people get nothing. When Democrats get in office, people get a little something." That's all. I never really thought about it; just fell in the groove. But then, when I started, what repelled me from it was when I actually started getting in there and working with these folks and seeing what the deal is. How it's shown up top down, how decisions are made by mostly white males, how there's almost a dime of difference, not even a dime's bit of difference between the Republicans and the Democrats in those high echelons, and especially you can take Israel for example. Both of them, they try to compete in terms of who could kiss Israel's butt the best, I might say. I've seen enough. I wrote them a letter. I told them, while quitting, look, you don't seem to think that eliminating white supremacy is important. It's not even on the radar. And there's a lot of, I've seen black folks get involved, and they're supporting white supremacy too. Of course, I guess on some degree we all are to a degree, because we've been born into this white supremacist system. And like Neely Fuller says, there's really only one government, and that's the government of white supremacy worldwide. And until that gets eliminated and replaced with a system of justice, these other problems are going to just stay intact. That's the major one, getting rid of that system of white supremacy and replacing it with a system of justice. And Neely Fuller defines justice as with two pieces. One, guaranteeing that no one is mistreated, and two, guaranteeing that the person who needs the most help gets the most constructive help. There's two little prongs. And that's how I try to operate, think, act, behave on a daily basis. And I'm not impressed with any of these. It's the same old game, twiddly dee and twiddly dumb. You know, the folks who are calling the shots will continue to call the shots no matter who's in office. And the folks who are calling the shots are all about white supremacy. And I'm still growing, I'm still learning, but that's how I see it right now.
So with this as a central part of your political attitude and consciousness, what then do you do as a political choice?
Again, you know, I look at the ballot. If there's something on the local level, you know, if I understand your question properly, you know, if there's something on the local level, the city, some kind of ballot, some kind of, for example, let me tell you this. For example, recently in Detroit, I've been working with Tom Barrow. I know he's been on your show in the past, and helping him and the Citizens for Detroit Future. That's the operation. And they've tried to get an ordinance passed about posting immediate election results on election night in Detroit. It's an initiative that was started by voters. I helped circulate the petitions and gather petitions, and it's just a small change to the election administration process in Detroit, which is major faulty. A lot of fraud going on in there. I've seen some of that. But anyway, something like that, trying to get that on the ballot, I'll work for that. I have worked for that. But the people in they're stalling it. In Detroit, they're stalling that election initiative. It's just to post immediate election results on the night of the election. I'm being overly brief here, but that's the gist of it. And I tell you, the powers that be in Detroit, what have you, they're blocking that thing. Because, see, if that posting ordinance goes through, that means the light's going to turn on and some of the rats got to run. I guess I have a little faith in it, but
and the rats will run. I like that.
Yes, ma'am.
I like that. Mm-hmm. But thank you so much. I'm so delighted that you called and opened up this little window for us to see, especially knowing that you're from Michigan. It just adds something because it puts me now in mind of all of the programs we've done about Detroit. And here you are telling us that you're right smack in the middle of it all. Thank you so much for calling in today.
You're welcome.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. So this is where we are. The idea of linking our attitudes, but being conscious, and this is what I think people have been saying all throughout the program today, developing a consciousness about how our attitudes are being shaped. This is not accidental. This is not something, you know, we actually have to be consciously engaged in formulating an attitude. When, for the most part, attitudes are shaped by the people who have an interest in shaping your attitudes for, their own purposes and means. But the business of defining your own political attitudes is work. It's a political job. Because you have to, by necessity, you have to examine the contradictions and you have to now figure out what is a better way to go. And this is the question. We'll come back to this question time and time again because we take our pulse periodically, just to measure our political health, to get an idea of how we're thinking about this world that surrounds us. What is the best line of defense? How do we cope with this inordinate opposition that is well-funded, that has a system, and we talk about that. There is a system out there shaping, intent on shaping our view to accept their craziness, to accept their insanities, to accept the nonsense that is passing for deep, considered, and wise leadership. No. It is a game. The game is to distract us from doing the kind of thinking that we really ought to do, so that when we examine the contradictions, we can find a path out of it. Kwame, you're on with us.
Yes, Yatrice, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you. What are your thoughts today?
Well, I pretty much concur with the earlier caller, Brother Jose, that one of the main things that we're dealing with is that we don't have a movement to make demands on this system. Even though that's not all I want to do, is just make demands. But we don't have a movement. And being that we don't have a movement, we're going to continue to stay in this situation.
What is your personal political attitude? How would you describe your personal political attitude at this time?
Disgusted. I would say disgusted. I have no plans on voting in this election. I don't see anybody to vote for. And I think that the present actors, all they're doing is acting, basically. I mean, you have a center right, and you have an extreme right from both parties. So, why would I want to participate in something like that?
Okay. So non-participation, is that enough, or is something else that has to happen beyond
non-participation? I think that the participation of the people should be building a movement. You know, a long-term, sustainable movement. I mean, it can't be a movement like Black Lives Matter. This movement that lasts, I shouldn't say the movement lasted for a few months, but the compromises that they have made sitting at the table with Hillary Clinton and some of the rest of the dumb Democrats.
And how is this movement, in your view, what is it going to look like? What is it going to do?
Well, the movement, what it's going to look like, is going to be a movement, I believe, that the first, one of the forefronts of the movement is that it's going to bring the social issues to the people, what they are and what we need to do. But I think it would define its own self, because it depends on what the state, how much state repression will come down, because the state's going to come down on us. So it's going to be different things. The state, we'll define the movement, but the state also will define it, what we need to do. It's not going to be, it's going to be, as Malcolm said, bloodless.
But can I?
Because these people are not going to give up nothing.
Could I make a note here, Kwame, and ask you to respond to it? The note I'm going to make is we've had movements. We have had movement after movement after movement. In your view, the movement that you are envisioning, or you are thinking about, in what ways will it be different so as to achieve the successes that you think movements such as this ought to achieve?
Well, I can't really say that because that's up to how we struggle. How things go. I can't predict the future. I know we need a movement, but I can't really say that. What's going to happen? Because different things occur. If you compare movements of the 1940s or 40s to the 1960s, there are a lot of different trajectories there.
So let me ask you the question in a different way. What would you say is one really important strategy that will be different in the movement that you are conceptualizing in your head. You're telling us about this movement. What would be a major departure from movements that we have seen before in terms of strategy?
I would say not to be naive of the state.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, not to be naive, that the state will come down on us like never before.
And who will basically be the soldiers in this movement?
Well, it'd be the people who we organize. I mean, the people we organize are the people who really want to make change. And I mean, of course, they're going to come from, many of them will come from the inner cities of America, for definitely. You know, of course, they'll come from other areas, but some of this will be unpredictable.
Of course,
Of course, it'll be determined how we struggle.
But you, for the moment, the way things stand now, you're not part of whatever is being offered as democracy, as presidential race. You're not part of that.
No, that's a mess. It's a theater. I mean, really. It's a theater.
Well, thank you so much, Kwame, for being with us today. I really appreciate your call.
Thank you for the good work. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. And this is what we ought to be doing more and more of. I love the idea of hearing people thinking about things. There's no right. There's no wrong. There's just the idea of being brave enough to say, this is a thought that I have, and I want to present it because I've invested in it. And people are free to appreciate what it is you're thinking. And this is how we progress as a community. This is how we form communities, and this is how we begin movements, the kind of movements that Kwame was just telling us about. So thank you all for calling today and contributing. Coming up next, the NBC Savings Club. You can reach me always at leadstories@gmail.com. I'm getting better and better at being very timely in responding. So that's progress. And I want to thank you, as always, for the pleasure and great privilege of your company. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.